This is the Concealed Carry Podcast, episode number 121. And welcome to the Concealed Carry Podcast, part of the ConcealedCarry.com network. I am your host, Riley Bowman, and today I am also joined by Jacob Paulson.
Yeah.
That's starting to become your thing, isn't it?
Well, I just don't know what to say. Like, hey, everyone, how you doing today?
Hey, that sounds pretty good. I could do that. Oh, I don't know where the music went, but hey, it's all good. Today is our usual news episode. I think this one has a fun title. Don't make me pull my piece, Robert gets a piece.
Yeah, we're taking that title from one of the articles we're going to be reviewing, and I had to read the headline like four times to understand it.
That's right. So that'll be a fun one. But today's episode is brought to you by Sports Afield. Once every 30 seconds in this country, a home invasion occurs. Have you ever considered how you would access your gun quickly in a home invasion while still keeping your firearms stored securely? The Sports Afield line of quick access handgun safes are perfect for the task. They are foam lined, yet built with heavy duty 16 gauge steel that will keep your firearms protected and still allow you to quickly access them in an emergency. A line of full-size rifle safes are also now available that make shipping and delivery easy. Trust this 100-year-old brand, yes, the same company that has published the Sports Afield magazine since 1887, with your firearm storage and security needs. See the full lineup at concealedcarry.com/sportsafield, and for a limited time, save 10% with the coupon code PODCAST10.
There you have it.
I had to get the little frog out of my throat, but okay. So being that this is a Monday episode, we have here a training tip, which is titled Push the Limits Drill. And this is a drill that actually I believe I did in one of our Guardian Nation shooter skill videos. And this is a favorite of mine. In fact, I use this quite often as sort of a warm-up of sorts when I go to the range. And so let me describe what Push the Limits Drill is. And this is really good for newer shooters, but also experienced shooters alike to find out where the limits are, hence the name Push the Limits. And what we mean by that is, how quickly can you fire and still keep control of your handgun? Because we know that in a self-defense situation, in a dynamic encounter, we want to be able to shoot the threat as quickly as possible. You know, to get the threat to stop being a threat as quickly as possible, right? And so we need to know what the limits are. How fast can I pull that trigger before I start getting, you know, too crazy and I'm getting outside of acceptable accuracy? So Push the Limits Drill, what we recommend is that you start by firing at a target. And I like to use, really, you can use just about anything. I mean, we're talking about acceptable accuracy based on a certain distance and a certain, you know, area or diameter of target. Sometimes I'll use a standard metric USPSA target that has kind of that center A zone. I'll sometimes use that, or sometimes I'll use like a 4-inch or 6-inch or 8-inch circle. It doesn't really matter. But the key is that you find an acceptable distance to start at based on that size of the target. Okay, so with a standard USPSA metric target, I will use that center A zone as my hit zone, just as a reference point. And then I'll begin doing this drill. Typically, I'll start at 5 yards with this one. And then if I find that 5 yards is too simple, then I'll move back to, you know, 7 and so forth. So here's what you do. Pick an appropriate size target, appropriate distance. And if you start out at the beginning here and you find that you're missing your hit zone, then you need to move up closer. Okay, but you start out and you want to count 1-1000, 2-1000, 3-1000, 4-1000, and so forth. And every time you list off a number, so 1, 2, 3, and so on, you fire a shot. So you're basically firing one shot every second. Mm-hmm. And for most people, that's pretty manageable. So because in that 1 second, you're able to fire that shot, get back on target, you know, realign sights if necessary, press, you know, the trigger for the next shot. All right, so then you want to go to 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. And every time you list off a number, so 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, which is about every half second, fire a shot. All right. And if you're still staying within your acceptable, you know, you still have acceptable accuracy, you're staying within that hit area, then go to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And that's about a shot every 20 or fifth to a quarter of a second. So about 0.20 to 0.25 seconds between shots. And if you're still hitting that hit area, then I even try to go faster. And in fact, I always try to push myself. So then I just try to do it and just go as fast as I can, just pressing that trigger just as quick as I can. The problem with that, though, is that if you're not aware of what your cadence is as far as how fast you're actually shooting, what your split times are between shots, and it's hard for you to actually judge, you know, how fast am I actually going and where did I cross the line from being controlled to being out of control. So a shot timer is also something I think is helpful to have and use so you can kind of measure some of those things as well.
So, yeah, and this is something you could do. I mean, it's something you should do live, but you could do dry and it's going to be directional at very least in terms of relative to your limits. And you could run this drill dry and push yourself a little bit faster. But then, you know, assume that when you go do it live, you're going to have a different result, and that's okay.
That's true. I would have a hard time doing it dry just because. With no recoil going on there. I mean, part of this is recoil management.
Totally.
But I don't find that quite nearly as challenging. Like what happens when I would do that dry is I would go so fast that the deviation that I would experience would purely be because my trigger work would just get so sloppy. Now that is still kind of discovering a certain limit, but with this drill, you know, what you're going to discover is if you have weaknesses in your grip, you're not going to be able to do this very quickly, right? If you have problems with trigger control, you're going to discover those problems as well. You might even find some issues with stance and other things, arm positioning, you know, depending on your preferred type of stance that, you know, we could certainly look at and make you a little bit better of a shooter to be able to control recoil and get back on target faster and faster. But it's still a great drill, regardless of how you do it, as far as pushing it and pushing it and pushing faster and faster and finding where your limit is, where your personal limit is. And I find that that becomes a boost of confidence, at least to a degree that you know at certain distance, at a certain size target, I can go this fast. And you're always going to try to push yourself to be able to go faster, and that's good. But if you ever have to shoot at a target in real life, hopefully you have that confidence to make that shot because you know what you can do in those circumstances.
Yeah, I still would say do this dry and do it live. And you know, I'm talking cert pistol and LASR so that you actually have some, you know, feedback and you know what your shot times are and if you're doing it properly. And one of the reasons I think it's so important to do it dry and live is because it's going to give you very clear data relative to how much recoil management plays into your ability to shoot quickly. And so if you go do this dry and you can, you know, very effectively do this at 6-7 shots per second, but then you go live and realize that you start to lose acceptable accuracy when you're doing 1 per second, that gives you that distinction. And now you know. And so in your ongoing dry fire training with LASR, you're going to have that in your head that this is what the role of recoil management plays in my world. So that's my 2 cents.
And that's a good 2 cents because it's important that if you are doing that you understand what you just explained, Jacob.
So, yeah, baseline of comparison.
Okay, cool. Well, there you go. Push the limits drill. Go try it out. It's also, I think, some other ways I've done it, just as for some examples, I'll use like a 4-inch diameter circle and I'll start at basically about 7 or 8 feet. So about maybe three yards and then run the drill. And with that one, with that being a much smaller target, that if I find that's too easy at say 3 yards, then I'll take one step back. So maybe go to 4 yards instead of going from say 5 to 7 to 10 or something like that. So anyway, just find that appropriate size target. Find a distance that works for you. And if it's too easy, then you just need to increase distance is basically what it comes down to. Okay, so let's get on to some of our news stories for today. But first, today's episode is also brought to you by Guardian Nation and also Mantis X, two of our favorite sponsors, one of them being kind of our own. that being Guardian Nation. But anyway, so let's get into it here. First up, news story is Arizona man Arizona men found guilty of Chinese gun running. This is an interesting one. And there was actually a couple men and a couple, I think, a lady and another guy that were charged with lesser charges. But this is a doozy here.
Yeah. I mean, the short answer is like, don't export guns out of the country. That's bad and illegal, and you'll get caught eventually, just so you know.
Yeah. I think I had a podcast episode with Greta where we talked about a guy in Georgia, I think, somewhere down in the Southeast, who was doing the same thing, but sending guns over to Africa. You know?
Yeah. No, I mean, the funny thing is, I was really actually shocked to see the dollar figures here. So essentially what we find is that these two men in Arizona, they'd been shipping guns, and we're not talking about, well, I mean, who knows how long they've been sending guns and how many guns they saw. But in terms of these charges were related to a handful of guns. I think it said, here it is, 3 rifles, 2 pistols, 4 rifle barrels, a silencer, and about 9,000 rounds of ammunition. So we're not talking about a massive armory. Like, they're not, you know, like sustaining an army over there, probably just some illegal activity. But anyway, they said that Plessinger had been paid at least $64,500. And Smith had been paid at least $59,550. So that's, you know, these people in Hong Kong are paying pretty good money for these guns, but it's obviously, you know, I'm not condoning it or suggesting it as a business practice, because it's illegal and they'll throw you in jail for a very, very long time.
Right. Yes, of course we're not condoning this, of course, but it's amazing. It's like, wow, they were getting paid pretty well.
That's, you know, a lot of money.
Per gun or per item basis. So
it's remarkable.
My goodness. You know, how it got discovered was that Hong Kong authorities, probably through a random search. I mean, I'll tell you, when I spent some time overseas, particularly in Asia, having things sent to me, every once in a while, you would get a package from the States, and it was very clear that it had been opened and searched.
Oh, in Brazil, they open every single package from the U.S.
Yeah, so it's amazing to me that they would think they could do this and get away with it for very long, because eventually, it's just inevitable it's going to be discovered. So, but anyway, we're glad they did get caught, because certainly this is not appropriate. It is illegal. They made some good money while it lasted, but now that has come to an end. And so let's move on to the next thing, which is the Georgia governor signs campus carry into law. Now, Governor Nathan Deal, this is actually a couple weeks ago, so this is not really, really new news, but it's still really relevant. And he caught a little bit of flack, I think, over this, because some people were like, wait a minute, you vetoed a similar measure last year. And I think what it was is you had those that were against this campus carry legislation that were like, you know, they really felt slighted that, hey, you vetoed this last year and now you're going back on us, you know? And but he basically said that he signed the measure because it may have greater significance for students who are going to or from a campus and may have to travel through quote-unquote dangerous territory. And I think maybe some opinions have been changed a little bit recently, because we've had recently a few incidents on college campuses where it's become clear that having responsible adults armed on campus, I think, does have a societal benefit.
Well, also, I mean, to clarify, last year when he vetoed the bill, he said he vetoed it because he had some very specific concerns about the bill. And this year he said that basically lawmakers, you know, met his demands. They made the changes to the bill that he had requested so as to allow him to pass it. And those changes supposedly are banning guns from on-campus childcare facilities, faculty and administrative office space, and disciplinary meetings. So apparently those are some of the reasons he cited the previous year for why he vetoed it. And those things must have been tweaked or changed in this year's version of the bill.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's fair to say. People are trying to make it sound like he flip-flopped, but I think really he was quite consistent in that, hey, there was these things that I didn't like about it last year, pull those out and I will sign it. And that's exactly what happened here. I do like this quote from Governor Deal. He said, at the present time, assailants can and do target these students, knowing full well that their victims are not permitted to carry protection. Even those who are weapon... This must be a little typo. Even those who have weapons carry license... Oh, who are... How about I read it?
You just got to read the whole thing.
Even those who are weapons carry license holders because they are either going to or coming from a campus where no weapons are allowed. So that's true. I mean, we've seen some attacks recently. I mean, there was the Ohio State deal earlier this year. We had some things in Texas a little while back. And I think it's reasonable to have guns, you know, being carried, like I said, by responsible adults, which certainly most college students apply.
Yeah, and I think interesting, you know, I mean, I see people freaking out. Georgia is a state that does not require any sort of training in order to obtain that weapon carry license, that he, as he calls it. And so, you know, in Georgia, a student, you know, age 21 plus could go apply, obtain a permit without any class or training and start carrying on campus. And I could see people just freaking out about it.
Yeah. How about this one? Texas government looks to lower permit to carry fees. So
yeah, this is cool. I like this. And I'll tell you a couple reasons I like this. One of the reasons I like it is because the bill, here's the deal. When we charge $140 for someone to get a license to carry, we're effectively guaranteeing that certain class of people will not be able to get it. Right?
Right.
That's my beef is it's like, okay, I get that there's some administrative expenses relative to, putting out a permit. Like, you know, some, we got to print some plastic and run a background check. Someone's got to run some fingerprints and, you know, like all that, I get it. It's probably not that different from state to state. So how some states are able to do that for $30 and some states have to charge $140 or $350 or whatever that state might be is always been kind of shocking to me. And Texas, a state where we generally think of as being pretty gun friendly, has charged, you know, historically $140. So this bill would drop it from $140 to $40. And to me, it's like, that should still cover the administrative expenses. What I see when I see something like this, $140 fee, is I think to myself, all right, the concealed carry program is not only self-sustaining, but it's also floating other expenses. And I see that as a challenge. Like it shouldn't be the burden of concealed carry permit holders or those who want to have a concealed carry permit to shoulder other administrative expenses. You know, let it self-sustain. And I think that this would continue to self-sustain it, though they claim that it would decrease state revenue by $21 million.
Really? I don't know if I buy that. Maybe, I guess so. I don't know.
Even if it's true, it's like, you know what, go charge the taxes where they would be appropriate then, because clearly, you know, it shouldn't be costing more than $40 to issue a permit.
Right. Yeah. So $21 million, if they'd reduced it by $100 per permit, you'd have to issue like 210,000 permits in a year.
Well, they're also cutting the cost of renewal. So the renewals currently are $70, and they're cutting renewals from $70 to $40 also. So that's $30 per renewal. But still, it's like, that's a lot of renewals and a lot of new applications to justify a $21 million loss.
I suppose maybe that is about right. But so this quote from one of the Democrats that were not in favor of this proposal, and this was Representative Nicole Collier, and she said this: "I'm just a little concerned that we've taken money from these other necessary programs and agencies, and now we're giving a break to people who want a concealed handgun license." And I'm thinking, when I read that, you're giving them a break to exercise a Second Amendment fundamental right.
Right? Yeah, I was pretty pissed when I read that.
And some of these people, like, I'll bet you Nicole Collier would be included in this group, you know, that are supposedly always championing for the lower class people. And this makes those supposed lower class people more easily able to get permits and defend themselves. Huh. A little bit of a double stand there, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, that's pretty... She should have thought twice before she said that.
What politician thinks twice before opening their mouth?
President. He reads president cue cards. Wow, good point. Yeah, he's not the current president.
Cue cards, probably. But anyway, On to Chicago, and this was kind of a tragic story. Recently, a bunch of police officers, well, I say a bunch, there were several police officers riding in the back of an unmarked gray tactical van. They were doing undercover surveillance type work in Chicago, and a couple of vehicles pulled up alongside this surveillance vehicle and opened fire on the van. Apparently, they had, you know, gotten a clue that there were cops inside. And somebody opened fire with a AR-15, they figure, a rifle, and just fired a bunch of times into the van, wounding two Chicago police officers. They were released from the hospital. That's what this story was reporting on, that they were, this was back on May 4th. So we didn't have our usual news episode last week, or otherwise this would have been reported on last week. But anyway, they were released from the hospital. They're okay. They're going to make it. And police are still trying to search for and find whoever it was that committed this heinous act. I mean, very, very just terrible thing that happened there.
Yeah, it really is. Here's something, though, that I thought stuck out to me in this article. This is from Father Manuel Durantes. He's from the Immaculate Conception Church. And he is quoted as saying, he's reaching out, he says, the church members are also reaching out to those firing guns on the city streets, quote, come to us, talk to us about whatever is going on within you so we can resolve whatever issue is going on, end quote. And I thought this was interesting because this is a guy, religious, leader who is not saying, dang those guns. Those guns hurt people. He's saying, you know what? We got a problem in our community. It's internal. It's in the people. It's in who they are and what their personal issues are. And that's, that he sees it as to some degree his role or, obligation even perhaps to address that. And so anyway, I just thought that kind of shined to me that you have members of that community that are saying, you know what? The problem is that the people need help. And we got to fix or heal whatever is going on inside of those people in order to stop the violence.
Well, in Chicago, just as a whole, has a lot of problems in this area. Sure. You know, they have strict gun control laws, yet it's just completely out of control there. And I don't see it getting better anytime soon. I appreciate and I respect folks in the community and churches and things, trying to do their part, but I do think that there's more that's got to be done from a legislative standpoint. And I think part of that is giving people the tools in some of these neighborhoods to actually defend themselves. Here's another thing that I took from this story, Jacob, and that is the need. It's a great reminder of the need to be constantly aware of your surroundings. Mm-hmm. Because, and I'm not saying these guys weren't, doing a good job. Who's to say that? There just was zero chance to. You couldn't foresee this necessarily happening, and this is a very bold attack that took place. But still, it's just a good reminder, I think, to all of us to constantly be aware of our surroundings. And many deadly encounters can be avoided if we are simply aware of things ahead of time and make the choice to get ourselves, extract ourselves from that situation. And I think that point will become clear in one of our justified stories here today that I'll bring up here in just a few minutes. Mm-hmm. Our prayers and thoughts go out to the families of those and those police officers as they continue to recover. And it even intimated in the article that their health and safety might still be in jeopardy because they believe they have intelligence that suggested these guys were targeted, that these thugs might know who they are. So security has been increased to protect these guys and their families. Hopefully no other harm befalls them or their fellow officers. Now on to North Carolina. And this was reported on our NorthCarolina.concealedcarry.com site. And it says here, two North Carolina men charged with stealing over 100 guns. That is quite the haul.
I'm gonna kind of give you a personal little tidbit here, 2 cents. Recently, I was at a gun store in Wheat Ridge, Colorado. So, Riley, kind of between you and I. Yeah. Not between you and I, like, intimately. I mean, like, geographically on a map. So, I was there, and I was there to do a transfer, of a gun, and recently there had been a gun store closer to me that I normally would have gone to do this transfer that was closed because someone had driven a car into the side of the gun store's building and then run in and stolen a bunch of guns. And so I commented to this gun store owner, I said, you know, normally I would have gone to such and such dealer to do a transfer because they're closer to where I live, but they're closed right now because they were broken into. And he launched into a tirade that was very educational for me. I'm not a dealer. I've never owned a retail gun store. And he essentially said, this stuff happens all the time. He said that their retail location where they are, they've had four different attempts with cars driving into the building for people, of people trying to steal guns from their store. And they say each time they contact the ATF and the ATF says they're going to do something and they never hear anything else. That doesn't mean the ATF's not doing anything, only that, you know, as far as the owner, this dealer is concerned, there's no follow-up and he's not aware that the ATF has investigated these things very much. And so when I read this story that we're about to report on from North Carolina, I was mostly just kind of elated to hear that the ATF found these dudes.
Right. And they only found them apparently because of a sting operation where essentially the ATF agents were looking for, you know, these black market deals. And they were able to stumble upon these guys trying to offload some of these guns they had recently stolen. And so they were able to catch them. The interesting thing I thought about this story was how the criminals accessed the gun shops. They cut holes into the metal siding of both gun shops. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, shattered gun display cases to get the guns. And that's pretty crazy stuff. I mean, to actually literally cut holes in the side of a building. So, you know, and listening to you talk, Jacob, I was just thinking how to prevent people from driving cars through the front of your business, your gun shop, and, you know, and being able to access it that way and steal the guns. There are things that can be done, you know, concrete bollards and things. There's a lot of things you could do to prevent this, but I understand that some of the cost of putting some of those security measures into place, it could be very prohibitive for some of these small businesses. But it's something they might want to consider, you know,
because the one I was at in Wheat Ridge, he said that after, you know, they're leasing that space, they don't own it, right? So they said after several of these issues, the landlord did install those concrete, I don't know what they're called, pillar looking things.
Bollards.
Yeah, in front of the store. And he said that they hadn't had an issue since. And that, you know, it was sort of one of those things where the landlord's like, you know, this is costing me tens of thousands of dollars every time it happens. You know, yeah, I'll finally invest into this. So, yeah.
Yeah, totally. I'm surprised that landlord hasn't kicked them out as a tenant. well, anyway. Yeah, so, you know, I'm sure we have some listeners of the podcast that are gun dealers. And I mean, just be advised and maybe take some additional steps to protect yourselves and your assets and your businesses. Because, I mean, for some of you small businesses, a brazen attack like this, a break-in, theft, whatever, can really set you back and maybe even take you out of business. So,
yeah.
Anyway, let's move on now to Florida, where the Florida House passes an exemption for police from the 3-day handgun waiting period. And Jacob, I have to say, this one blew my mind. I was like, whoa, what the heck? Like, you mean to tell me that law enforcement officers in the state of Florida had to wait 3 days to pick up their guns that they were purchasing?
Yeah, I was shocked. I read it a couple of times to make sure I was clear, because here's the funny thing, too, that apparently there's already a legal exemption for concealed carry permit holders.
Yeah.
So imagine that there's like three people in the state of Florida. One of them is a normal dude. He's got a permit. One of them's a law enforcement officer, probably does not have a permit, never felt a need. He's in law enforcement. And the third is neither a permit holder or an officer. Three men walk into a gun store. Okay. And the one who can walk out with the gun is the one with the concealed carry permit. The law enforcement officer and the normal, not special at all person, they both got to wait 3 days.
That's just crazy to me. And then I had to ask, why did it take so long to pass something like this?
Yeah, I don't know. But I mean, look, the good news is, you know, I guess that it's changed, that someone said, hey, let's change this. And they did.
Right.
So, I mean, that's the good news here.
That is the good news. So congrats to law enforcement officers in the state of Florida now being able to walk in and walk out with guns legally purchased. You know, I imagine that some of the logic with, you know, how the state's 1.7 million concealed carry permit holders had this exemption already in place was, well, they've been background checked. And so thus, you know, we can, you know, eliminate this 3-day waiting period, but so have law enforcement officers.
Right. Right.
So anyway,
it seems like a pretty obvious oversight that's being corrected.
Indeed. Indeed. So thank goodness they got that oversight corrected now. Let's jump now into our first justified story. And this one comes to us from Clarksburg, West Virginia. And there's not a lot of details to the story, but it is where we took away our title of this episode today kind of came from this story. So as reported on WestVirginiaAlways.com, a Channel 12 News affiliate there, a Weston man, it says, was arrested Wednesday after police said he attempted to rob a hotel in Clarksburg.
This is so good.
Austin Lodge, age 24, went into the Sutton Inn on Emily Drive at approximately 2 a.m. and demanded money from the clerk. The clerk told police that Lodge, who was wearing a black hoodie, jeans with sequins, nice, stylish, and earrings, covered his face and said, "Don't make me pull my piece." The clerk then pulled a firearm, police said, and Lodge ran toward Kroger without taking anything from the hotel. It doesn't say who Kroger is. Maybe that's a Kroger store. I don't know.
Yeah.
But anyway, and then he was later found at the Sleep Inn and was arrested on a first-degree robbery charge. So
to clarify, he wasn't sleeping at the Sleep Inn. He was found at Sleep Inn trying to also rob that place, what I understood.
Right. So don't make me pull my piece. And then the clerk pulls his piece on him and lets him have a piece.
Except it doesn't say if he actually had a gun or not. I mean, he might have just been making an empty threat, right? About pulling his piece. But poor Austin. trying to rob the hotels.
Yeah. So, you know, by the way, I'm sure we're going to get somebody that's going to write into the podcast, Jacob, and say, you know, why are you sympathizing with this crook?
Oh, yeah, because I said poor Austin.
Yeah.
You know, Austin's not a smart dude. I mean, just my two cents, too. Like, if I was a criminal, hotels would be the last place I go looking for cash from a till. Like, who pays for hotel rooms with the cash? Like, how much cash could they possibly have on hand?
I guess it depends on the type of hotel.
I guess so. Maybe I don't know as much about the Sutton Inn as I should.
Anyway, yeah, so some criminals just aren't that smart. So here we go now to Texas. This is a little bit more serious story, at least how I look at it. This was in the Arlington area. Two men were killed Wednesday night. Now, once again, this would have been actually two Wednesdays ago because we weren't able to report on this last week since we had Rob Pincus as our special guest. Two men were killed Wednesday night in a shooting at an Arlington sports bar, and they've been identified by the county medical examiner. By the way, this was reported on our concealedcarry.com site. James Jones, age 48, of Grand Prairie, went into the Zona Caliente sports bar and grill at 6:15 p.m. and walked up to the manager, 37-year-old Cesar Perez of Duncanville, and at that point, an altercation began, during which Jones pulled out a gun and fatally shot Perez. At this point in the investigation, there's no reasoning given for Jones to go into the store with the lethal intent. And however, after the shooting, an unnamed quick-thinking customer who was armed with a concealed handgun then approached Jones and shot him to death. Cook said, the Cook being the lieutenant with the police department. By all accounts, this is quoting Cook, Lieutenant Cook, by all accounts, he decided to engage the shooter because he wanted to prevent further loss of life. If the shooter was going to do the additional shooting because he engaged the shooter, there was no further loss of life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, a couple of thoughts that came to my mind. I don't know how busy or crowded it was, but no one else was harmed. So, you know, shot placement appears to have been good and effective, and no other innocent people were hurt, because that would be something you might think of in this kind of a situation where shots are being fired in a restaurant, you know, that kind of thing. Another thing that, you know, kind of seems to be dominating a lot of the comments on the article on the website is that in Texas, there is, you know, there's some legal restrictions relative to establishments that derive more than, you know, 51% of their revenue from alcohol sales or something along those lines. And I'm not a Texas instructor. I don't know Texas law perfectly. But apparently, you know, the reports are that this particular establishment is not in that category, that they do not derive 51% or more of their revenue from alcohol sales, and that they did not, therefore, have the necessary 30-06 no gun allowed sign or whatever.
Right, right. So, you know, but either way, I'll just say I found it interesting that the other patron of this restaurant or bar or whatever it was, that he approached him, and I mean, it's almost like he ambushed Jones. I'm not saying that was a bad thing. I just find it interesting. You know, this guy decided to insert himself in the situation, claiming he wanted to prevent further loss of life, and I guess I applaud him for that. That's pretty, you know, respectable, I think, for him to put himself at great risk to do what he did, and he, you know, he put an end to it. Who's to know what this guy might have done further? I don't know. Maybe he just was concerned about this manager. Maybe he was looking to do more. I don't know. But either way, the situation was ended.
Yeah, and we don't know even, you know, what the good Samaritan in this case observed, you know, or what he heard, or all those little details that might influence a decision like this. And it's interesting because our article, the way our writer wrote it, is that he approached the gunman. I read this news story on a couple different sites, and I, you know, not everyone is using that verbiage, you know, that he approached him. Others are just suggesting that he turned and fired. So how much time he put into thinking about that, or how much observation he had before he decided to act, is unclear. I think, you know, for listeners, the lesson is pretty clear, right? That, hey, in that moment, you just watch somebody gun someone else down, and what you do or don't know is, am I next? Or yeah. Not? Is this person going to, you know, run out and go drive off and go home and wait for the police to show up and arrest them? Or are they going to turn on me and keep firing? And that's a decision that you may not want to wait around to find out.
Yeah. Well, pretty crazy situation. I mean, that's a crazy place to be and have to. I mean, to me, that's like one of the worst case scenarios, that you're in a crowded restaurant or bar and you have a threat that needs to be dealt with. It's just, and it sounds like there was a lot of people that very quickly were trying to rush out of there because there was a woman that was injured when she cut her feet on broken glass while trying to escape. You know, so, I mean, this type of situation can oftentimes lead to total pandemonium. And so that would be kind of another thing I would take from this, that, hey, be aware, you know, consider the possibility that when you're in that type of environment and this sort of situation arises and deadly force is used and you fire shots, pandemonium can very quickly ensue, and you just need to be aware of and careful of that. We don't want any stray shots. I think, as you mentioned, no one else got hurt other than the woman cutting her feet on glass or whatever. But so, you know, the shots must have been placed well, but just a good reminder. Now, on to our final story here, also reported on our NorthCarolina.ConcealedCarry.com site. And this one really got my attention, Jacob, for one specific reason, other than there was five robbers involved, which is pretty crazy. But essentially what happened here was that you had a man, and they do not identify who he is, but he's a 22-year-old man who was getting ready to head out to dinner with friends, and he heard a knock at his door just as he's getting ready to go. He looks through the peephole and saw someone wearing a hoodie and answered the door with his Glock 30 in hand. And as he answered the door, he didn't see anybody there anymore, but when he turned his head to look down the stairs, he was kicked in the face as the suspect, Stacy Kendall Ross, which actually a guy, even though he has a name of Stacy, I had to get a little clarification on that, Ross kicked him in the face and then tried to force his way in. The 22-year-old man, a resident, he fired 5 shots and hit Ross with 4 of those shots. Ross ran away. His co-conspirators ran away. And later, Ross died from his injuries at the hospital. So, 5 potential robbers here. That's a pretty intense situation there. By the way, this 22-year-old resident was not alone. He had his mother and also a friend of his also inside the apartment. So there was other people's lives that, you know, needed to be protected and defended here. But here's what I thought was interesting, Jacob. He looked through the peephole and he saw someone there that he couldn't really identify and had a hoodie on. And so thus I take it that to mean that they were trying to conceal who they were. And yet he still opened the door.
Yeah, you know, I'm sympathetic because I think that that would be a common response. It may not be a smart response, but I think it would be a common response. He was concerned enough to kind of ready the gun, right? Either go get it or to, you know, draw it and kind of, you know, said he answered the door with Glock 30 in hand. So he was on edge enough to sort of have the gun. And I got to admit, I mean, I don't know if I've ever answered the door to a dark hoodied figure, but I do all the time answer the door to people I don't know who they are. You know, like, you know, this is the season for door-to-door salesmen in my neighborhood. Everyone's pitching, you know, solar panels and pest control. So I've answered several of those recently, and I don't know who those people are. I look, I'm like, yeah, I don't know who that is. And so I might go to the gun a little bit or kind of have it ready, you know, and things like that. But I'm not going to, you know, choose to not open the door because I don't know who it is. And in this case, yeah, dark hooded sweatshirt. I guess what I'm saying is wise, probably not. But common, like normal response, yeah, I think that most people would answer that door and say, who are you? What do you want?
I agree that it's probably a common response. I also agree that I have many times opened my door to people I didn't know, but I was able to look through the peephole and see, okay, you know, this dude's wearing a shirt and tie, or he's got some lanyard over his neck with an ID, with an identification of some sort. He's a salesperson. He's trying to sell something or whatever. But here's the clue, right? He, like you said, he had enough reason to be suspicious to open the door with his handgun in his hand. And I know that that may still be the common response. And I know some of you listening are be like, well, why not? You know, yeah. but here's the deal. Like, you have reason to be suspicious like that. You have no obligation to open your door. You have no obligation to respond. And yet you, by opening that door, you invite the opportunity for trouble to begin. And I mean, this guy is lucky, one, that he was not seriously hurt himself, and was lucky that he, you know, I guess that he didn't do something else wrong, you know, because like anytime a shot is fired, I mean, keep in mind, 4 out of the 5 shots hit the suspect. Where did that 5th shot go? Just imagine that some, you know, 5-year-old girl playing on the street across the way got hit by that. Oh boy, you know, so that's why I'm saying, you know, the shots fired never needed to happen in this situation. And hey, you know what? I'm glad that he rose to the occasion. I'm glad he was able to be victorious in this battle, if you will, but still it should never have had to happen in the first place.
Yeah, a couple other things that I'll add to that, other than the fact that this Ross guy is clearly like a ninja. Like, it's pretty hard to kick someone in the face. Anyway, but aside from that, here'd be another 2 cents. You know, the guy who answered the door, what if his mom, who was also home, had been the one to answer the door? Would she have checked the people?
No kidding.
You know, so like, he's lucky is what I'm suggesting. Not just because, you know, whatever, but someone else might answer the door. So if you're listening to this and you think, hey, I'd be all over that, I'd check the people, I wouldn't, you know, with the other people in your house, are they as cautious as you are? Have you had that conversation? Have you prepared other members of your family and had those conversations about when you will and won't answer the door? Another couple thoughts is that there's some physical security rated things that here that could have gone a long way. Now, this apartment, so there's limited things that they may or may not be able to do per, you know, landlord, whateverness. But the fact that they had a peephole at all is a good sign. I mean, do you have a peephole? If you're listening to this, you know, go. It's not that hard to install. Another thought would be, do you have a storm door or a screen door or something else that would allow you to open your primary door but still have some layer between you and the people outside so that you could hold a conversation or see and get some more sense for for their intentions. That would be another thought. I mean, can you leave some sort of door latch, you know, connected so you could open the door just a crack and hold a conversation without admitting entry to that individual? So, you know, there's some physical security things that, you know, a person might learn from reading this.
Yeah. And you know, like I said, I don't like criticizing people that heavily, but I talked about what I did because this is why we do what we do on this podcast, so that folks, the next time that something like this might happen to you, that you take a moment, that you pause and think through your actions and think about the possible consequences that might occur because of that. And so pause the next time, you know, that you look to the people and see a dark, shady character, you know, knocking on your door. You might want to think twice before opening that door. So anyway, still a great story. You know, I mean, we love featuring these justified instances. I mean, certainly this use of force, I think, was justified. There's no charges pending. And that's what it's all about. That's what we love here at ConcealedCarry.com and the Concealed Carry podcast, is inspiring and teaching and encouraging and educating people to be able to do this more effectively. So thank you for listening to these news stories today. But first, a special announcement that I'm going to let you give, Jacob, about the survey.
Yeah, so I've spent about a little over a decade now as a firearm instructor. I've seen a lot of students, and I've always held a really strong opinion about a specific topic that I'm finding more and more, I'm learning that it's actually highly debated. I assume that everybody in the industry agreed with me, but I've seen comments lately, and I've heard from some people, and I thought, geez, you know, maybe not everyone feels the same way I do. And so we're putting out a survey, hoping to gather some data. So let me give you some more detail. What we're wondering is how you store your firearm or firearms when you're in bed, when you're sleeping at night, and you're worried about a potential home invasion. You know, do you have a gun near you, with you, and is it locked up in something? Is it not locked up in something? Is it just sitting on the nightstand? Is it in a safe on the nightstand? Is it under the bed? Is it a handgun? Is it a revolver? Is it a shotgun? Is it, you know, what is it? Where is it? How is it stored? Are there children in the home? So I'm looking for some data, and I promise that once we complete the survey and we do some other research and some, I'll call it testing, that we're going to come back to you with the results. So I'm asking as a favor to from listeners, if you'll take this survey, it'll take you about 2 minutes. There's about four or five questions, and it'll give us some good data, some good insight, and listen for a future episode where we'll come back and share the results.
Totally. Awesome. Go check out the survey. And
it's
also
in the show notes there. Just look for, please take our bedtime survey. Click here.
Cool. And also, I hope that folks will check out Guardian Nation at guardiannation.com. Longtime listeners will be familiar that this is kind of our special members-only area within concealedcarry.com, where we've really worked hard and still are working hard to build a shooter skill library. We have monthly Guardian Nation live broadcasts, past recordings in the vault, archives that you can access and watch. I mean, guys like Chris Chang, Kyle Lamb, Mike Hughes, other, you know, legit people, and other great ones coming up very soon as well. We just got done last week with Rob Pincus. Had a great time. In fact, I think it was a phenomenal Guardian Nation live broadcast that we did with him that folks really enjoyed and got a lot of value out of. Anyway, also you get, as a Guardian Nation member, 10% off everything sold at concealedcarry.com, including training courses. And with that, I just wanted to highlight that this Friday, I mean, the time is getting short. We do have a couple of spots left. We've sold quite a few, but we still got a couple of spots left for a special. This is a brand new course we've never taught before. It's going to be really well suited to concealed carry in the real world and trying to take people to the next level with their shooting and self-defense skills. So we have our first ever Guardian Essentials pistol course this Friday that if you're a Guardian Nation member, you can also get 10% off that course. And so get signed up soon, because very soon that Friday is going to come and go. Members also receive a box of shooting gear four times a year, which is worth at least the value of the membership. And so join now and get your dues returned to you and gear every 3 months. Learn more and get started at guardiannation.com. And then also today, this episode is sponsored by Mantis X, which we have referred to as the instructor in your pocket, and it It attaches to your firearm and sends real-time data back to your mobile phone that will guide you in correcting the most common deficiencies as a shooter. Tired of that grouping being too high, too low, or simply too wide? Mantis X will be your new best friend and help you learn how to shoot better. Watch Riley and Jacob's review and learn more at concealedcarry.com/MantisX, M-A-N-T-I-S-X. And finally, in our next episode, this Wednesday of this week, we will be talking about tactical medicine. I will have on the podcast Rob Beckman, who is, you've heard him on the podcast before, one of our instructors over there in Ohio. And we're also going to have Bryant Garibay, who is a very well-respected expert in this field. He's also a very talented shooter and instructor, but he instructs both the shooting side of things and also the tactical medicine side of things. And so I'll look forward to diving into that content with them this week for this Wednesday's episode of the Concealed Carry Podcast.
Cool. That's exciting.
Yeah, totally. So with that, just a reminder, folks, we appreciate all of your support. You're listening to our podcast. It continues day by day, week by week, month by month, growing and getting out there even further. I would encourage you that if you enjoy the Concealed Carry Podcast, that you would share it with your family and friends. And also, please, please, if you haven't done so already, and especially if you're able to do so on iTunes, you can go there and leave a review of the podcast, which we'd love to read and share here on the podcast at a future date. So we'd love to see that those reviews continue to come in, and also shares on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, et cetera, et cetera. So with that, I'm going to sign off. Jacob?
Yeah, thanks everyone for listening, and until next week.
All right. So we'll see you next time. Take care. Train hard. Be safe.
Reminder that laws vary from place to place, and we encourage listeners to seek local legal advice to understand applicable laws. The Concealed Carry Podcast, Concealed Carry Inc., ConcealedCarry.com, and their affiliates strive to share insights and stories about firearm-related incidents and laws, but things could be different where you live, or laws may have changed by the time you listen to this. We cannot be held liable for your actions based on the information.